And Smashville, good morning, and thank you for joining us. It is Morning Drive on this Friday on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are live from Kitchen Notes inside of Omni Nashville Hotel. Nick Braden, D. Mason, Chase on this Friday. A lot to get to. Kind of a little dreary out. Clouds are out. A little rain.
Got some heat lightning this morning.
We did. Yeah. We did. But we got a lot to get to this morning on the show. A lot of Titans, a lot of Vols to get to. But really kind of I want to do just a couple of quick hitters in the opening segment because a lot of news coming down yesterday, and we'll have plenty of thoughts on day two of the Titans and the Bucks from their camp yesterday as they wrap up their joint practices. Obviously, Saturday night they will play in preseason game number two, but a little Titans, a little MLB, and a little Brant Snedeker to start. But let's start with the suspension in Major League Baseball. Urena gets 6 games for hitting Ronald Acuna of the Braves. So, gentlemen, we got to talk about that. And Chase McCabe, you were only off by 44 games.
I know. I missed it by just a little bit, didn't I?
Just a little bit. Just a little bit.
I think it's good enough.
I'm okay with the suspension. I know I maybe came off a little soft on the whole issue yesterday, and I've thought about it, and maybe I'm more on your side, your guys' side, than I thought. It's certainly not appropriate to go after players. But I don't think it was intentionally to hurt him on his head or whatever. Had he thrown at his head, I would have been furious. But, you know, who knows? We don't have any idea what his intention really was. But, it's a Bush League move. I think I said that yesterday, but I probably wasn't as harsh as I should have been yesterday. And so I'll come around with you guys on this one. The guy had a streak going, and he didn't want to give up the streak. So he ended it in kind of a Bush League sort of way.
Hey,
so,
Nick, write this down. Friday, August 17th at 6:03 a.m., Braden agrees with us.
Put it on the board. Mark the tape.
It's big.
We'll replay
it's
it
big
later
moment.
In the year. But, no, are you guys okay with just the 6 games? Because, like, if he's a position player, 6 games, I think, carries a little bit of a weight. But as a pitcher, you're basically missing, what, 1 trip through the rotation?
Yeah, but you see this all the time. Starting pitchers get 6 and position players get 1. I mean, that's sort of the equivalent. So it's pretty standard. He's getting suspended for a start, which I think is fine. I don't think, again, I'm not going to back off what I said yesterday about the outrage being a little too much for me. It's just he plunked a guy. Like, it's just a – okay, it was inappropriate. Okay, it shouldn't have happened. It was intentionally trying to end his streak. Okay, Braves fans don't like it. I acknowledge and understand why you don't like it, and I agree that it's Bush League, but it wasn't some like massive double homicide. Like the guy deserves a suspension for a game, and you see this all the time when a pitcher and a hitter get in a fight, right?
Yep.
A lot of times you see the pitcher get 6 and the hitter get 1 because they're equivalent. They're the same. So it is just it's a one start suspension by all intents and purposes. And I think that's about right. Like, listen, you plunked a guy. You shouldn't have done it. It was wrong. Don't do it again. Here's 1 game suspension. We all move on. And that's it's sort of I'm sort of satisfied with the outcome, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Day two of the Titans and the Bucks yesterday, joint practice. We'll get to a handful of things that went down, but Delanie Walker limps off the practice field yesterday. They believe it could be a toe issue. Any cause for concern with Delanie Walker, who I feel like is just one of these guys that for the most part you think is virtually invincible?
Yeah, I mean, turn 34 on Sunday, so this is a big deal. I mean, this is any guy who's that age playing in the NFL, especially a guy who gets tackled, right? A guy who gets hit on a routine basis. It's a concern. So I think as far as it's also at a position, pass catcher, that the Titans are in desperate need of people to be healthy and on the field. Rishard Matthews hasn't been on the field at least like ever. Corey Davis is starting to come on. Taywan Taylor, Tajay Sharp, they're starting to show that they're maybe growing a little bit in their second year, which is what you need to see and what you're supposed to do. But, you know, Jonnu Smith is going to be asked to have a bigger role this year in this offense. And if Delanie Walker is out for any extended period of time, it's a big concern because he's the veteran leader and the veteran presence on the offense as far as skill players go. And it's a huge concern. So, he's pretty tough. I wouldn't imagine it doesn't sound like it's too serious, but anytime a player of that magnitude limps off a field and doesn't return, it's a huge, huge story. So all eyes on 82 in, I guess it's navy blue now, not as much two-tone blue.
And yesterday, Vrabel kind of trolled with the media a little bit after the practice. When they asked him about Delanie Walker, he said, "I'll give you an update as soon as we find out." And then he jokes and he starts laughing. He goes, "Actually, I probably won't give you an update."
At least he's self-aware.
Is that funny or is that act kind of wearing thin?
It's funny to me because I wasn't at the press conference trying to get information from him. Mm-hmm. If I was there trying to work on a story, if I was Teron Davenport or Joe Rexroad and I'm trying to work on a story about something and he won't give me the, then I'm probably a little bit more upset about it. I chuckled when I saw that the first time because at least he's making fun of himself to some degree.
He's being looked at. I'll let you know after. I probably won't let you know, but hopefully he'll be okay.
Now, let me
say, I don't have a problem with that now, but here's after like 3 weeks to go by and I'm trying to write a story about Delanie Walker and he hasn't told us anything, then it becomes an issue, like Teron Davenport said yesterday about Rashawn Evans.
This is what bothers me a little bit about it, and I'm not making a big stink of it, but if the collective assembled media, everybody that's there that covers this team for a radio station, a TV channel, a print publication, if you're going to complain that Mike Vrabel doesn't give you information and withholds injury reports, then I don't want to hear you laughing when he makes a joke.
I don't have a problem with it. I mean, it's his first day, though. Like, if it, again, to me, it's about how long it goes. Like, if Delanie Walker's back at practice tomorrow, then the joke means nothing. If Delanie Walker is out for a week and a half and we haven't seen him practice for a week and a half and he still won't give us any information, then it becomes a problem to me. It's about the extended injury to me that's the issue. Is there an actual injury that's keeping him out for a reason? Or did he just have a tweak that he needed to stop practice today? And if he's back in 2 days, then it's a non-story and the joke's fine. But I think it's about the big picture with me with Vrabel. It's about the long term. Like, if you're going to do this for everybody forever, as long as you're the head coach of the Titans, then eventually it's, if you go 6-10, the media is going to get upset with you about stuff. Like, he's going to be a bad 6-10 coach because if he's going to act like this. In one little press conference about one player's potential limping off a practice field one time, it's tongue in cheek and you can laugh about it and move on.
Does it change for you though in the regular season, because you're not giving anything away in the regular season for the sake of opposition?
Don't you have to put it on a list? I mean, it's illegal.
You have to put it on the injury report. But I'm saying, like, as far as talking to the media, I mean, you're going to put it on the report saying, okay, he's questionable toe, he's probable hip or whatever. But, like, right now, he gives you nothing, which I don't think it's that big of a deal in the preseason, because is the preseason opponent really concerned if Delanie Walker plays on Saturday
night? No, of course not. It's about how healthy is the player. Like, what people want to know is Delanie Walker seriously injured? Should we be worried about this or not?
Right.
And that we don't – since he won't tell us, we won't know that for a couple of more days. And they technically, I'm assuming at that particular moment, he probably didn't know. So that's why I'm okay with the joke, is that he didn't. There's no way that they would have had a perfect assessment of Delanie Walker.
Yeah, that's a good point. Especially coming right off the field.
Right, like he may not have even seen Delanie Walker walk off the field. So I don't know. I mean, I think the issue for me is the Rashawn Evans situation, where he hasn't, your number one draft pick hasn't practiced in 2.5 weeks, and nobody knows anything. And what we're left to do is say, well, it's not heat exhaustion because he's wearing a hoodie in 90-degree weather. It's not upper body because he's working the ropes. Like, that's what we're left to do after weeks of this, and he's a pretty important player. I think it just depends on where this goes, right? Like, the joke won't age well if Delanie Walker doesn't practice for 2 weeks and he never tells us anything, and we have no idea if he's ready to go in week one or not. So that's sort of where I fall on it.
Chase McKay back at the Game Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet. What were you going to say about Vrabel?
Well, I know it's a joke and he's trying to be tongue-in-cheek, but the fact that this is kind of becoming a theme with him and you have people that are trying to do their jobs, I understand he has a job to do as the head coach and to protect the football team and make the football team better. I completely respect that. But the media have a job to do as well, and he doesn't make it easy. And so that's where I kind of take issue with it. And again, I know it's preseason. As you were saying, Braden, if he's back on the field in 2 days, this is a non-story. But it did kind of rub me the wrong way of, like, really, you're going to get up there and be kind of a little cocky and arrogant about it of, yeah, I'm not going to tell you what's going on. I mean, I have a problem with that. Like, just like I have a problem with how hockey does injuries and, upper body, lower body, and won't give you detail and won't give you information. So, to each their own, but I didn't like it very much.
Hockey's very cheeky. They're like, oh, he had lower body. Well, we all saw the guy hurt his ankle.
Is that a rule in the NHL, or is that just the way things have always been done with the upper body?
Both.
It's a little bit of both. I mean, they don't have to disclose injuries like the NFL does, and we all know why the NFL discloses injuries. But yeah, exactly. So I think it's more coach's prerogative and team prerogative. I mean, each team in the NHL seems to do it a different way. Peter Laviolette plays it very close to the vest. That's just how he is, and that's fine, but it does make it difficult when you're trying to do a job and you're trying to get information.
All right, coming up next, we'll get into the Delanie Walker injury a little further, and also a big performance from a Nashville guy, a Vanderbilt guy, in a sport we don't talk a lot about. Stay there. It's Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are live from Kitchen Notes inside the Omni Nashville Hotel on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are live from Kitchen Notes inside the Omni Nashville Hotel. Nick Cale, Braden Gall, Derek Mason, and Chase McCabe with you. Good to have you in on this Friday. All right, boys, so let's continue with the Titans discussion. Delanie Walker yesterday limps off the field. It looks like a toe injury. Who knows how legit and how serious it is. My guess is it probably isn't. I'm not overly concerned about it. But just thinking about your number one target for Marcus Mariota, think about the fact that he's 34 years old and just how important he is to this year's team. Can you make the case after Marcus, and I think obviously the season is going to go as far as Marcus will take this team, can you make the case that Delanie is as close to indispensable as Taylor Lewan as you can come up with? Like, I mean, I think losing Taylor Lewan would be just awful, but after that, I feel like Delanie Walker could be the most indispensable when we talk about players not named Marcus Mariota.
Yes and no. Because we've yet to see what this team looked like without Jack Conklin. Because Kelly, is he the guy that can hold up for 3-4 games without Jack Conklin in there?
I'm not sure. You want
to. Yeah, exactly. So, and then here's the thing. If we believe that Jonnu Smith is a capable pass catcher, granted, he's not going to be Delanie Walker, but if he gets in a game and he shows some flashes, isn't that what we want? We want to try to figure out now if this guy, Jonnu Smith, can he be the heir apparent to Delanie Walker? Well, if Delaney's out for any extended amount of time, this is the time. This is when we need to find out early on in the season, not later in the season when we're making a playoff push. You know, it's rather have it done early in the season. Well, you'd rather not had done at all, but if you got to go this route, done at the beginning of the season, see how he does, new offense. I think in this offense, this is what I'm starting to realize, and I'm optimistic. This offense is going to get guys open, regardless if you can play or not.
So it's more scheme than it is the
actual
talent?
I think it's
going to
be more scheme. So a guy like – and I'm not saying that
– glass half full over there,
D-Mace.
Yeah,
I'm not saying
that
the guys can't play. But if you look at, you know, what they did in L.A. with Cooper Kupp and all those guys, not to say Cooper Kupp is not a good player.
Taylor Higbee?
Exactly. They got these guys open. Now, then it was up to them to catch the football. I think in this system, whether it's Delanie or Jonnu, they're going to find a way to get these guys open. And then it's up to them to catch the football. Now, that's what Jonnu Smith is. If Delanie Walker's out for an extended amount of time, he's going to have to prove that he can consistently catch the football. Not get open, because I think he's going to get open.
He's a great athlete.
Yeah. I think he's got to prove that he can consistently catch the football.
Got to be able to block at some point. I mean, I know tight ends are glorified receivers at this point, but you got to be able to block a little bit. So I agree. I spinning it a little bit here. If he is out for this preseason game, let's say, that gives Jonnu a ton of reps. So I think that's – or at least more than he was going to get. So I think that is the glass half full way to look at it. Hey, we'll learn about Jonnu Smith a little bit more now over the next couple of days and this game against Tampa Bay tomorrow and then maybe a couple of days in practice, however long Delanie's out. There's an opportunity to get more looks at Jonnu Smith and Luke Stocker probably. So – not that I think Luke Stocker should be on the field a whole lot, but Jonnu Smith was drafted pretty highly and has a lot of talent, so it'll be interesting to see what they do with him. I don't think I think your answer to the question first, D-Mace, is I totally agree with it. It's it's yes and no. He is the most important pass catcher and a vocal leader on the football, on the entire football team, and he's the most experienced pass catcher, one of the best tight ends in the NFL. But to suggest he's more important than Jarrell Casey or Taylor Lewan or some of these other positions that we know are more important positions than tight end, that's sort of the rub there. Like, no, he's not even close to as important as Taylor Lewan. Taylor Lewan makes $80 million. It's not even close. But he's a critical piece. Mm-hmm. And that's – so anytime he's out in the regular season is going to be a big blow.
But even though when you factor in
– could be back tomorrow, by the way. We don't know.
But if you factor in Corey Davis kind of – and he's had a couple of really good days in a row, the fact that he's been inconsistent as far as being available mm-hmm. and everything else with this offense, I mean, the one thing we know beyond Taylor Lewan is that Marcus and Delaney, they have that chemistry. They have that rapport. So if he loses that – and, yeah, Taywan Taylor's had a nice camp, and Corey Davis has shown flashes, but in the event – and I'm just saying if it was possible that he misses some games mm-hmm. – if you're Marcus, who do you go to? Like, who can you rely on?
Well, it can be twofold. It can be a good thing, and then obviously it can be it's a double-edged sword. Basically, it's now you force Marcus right at an early point in the season or in the preseason to look for other guys to get out of that mode of Delaney's always going to be there. He's going to be my security blanket, so I look to him first. This gives him an opportunity to get away from that. Now he has to go through his progressions as a quarterback. Now he has to see the second, third, the fourth guy down the field. No longer can he look at Delaney, go off, and then come back to Delaney expecting Delaney to be open. More than likely he is. It forces him now to read everything, to go through his progressions, and to get confidence in other guys. You know, throw other guys the ball. Allow other guys to get in the floor on the offense. Now, the other end is Marcus can look like a fish out of water without Delaney walking the game. He can hesitate, you know, patting the football, feet getting a little antsy, not knowing where to go with the football, running outside the pocket. All of those are characteristics of a guy that is not comfortable with what he sees as a quarterback. He's not comfortable with the guys that he wants to throw the football to. His security blanket is no longer out there. So now, instead of him sitting in a pocket an extra second, half a second, 2 seconds, now as soon as he feels any rush, he's getting outside the pocket and going.
I think one of your first thoughts is also correct in that I think the offense is designed to scheme whoever's in the game to get open. And I think Marcus has worked tirelessly this preseason on going through the reads, regardless of the numbers of the players that are out there, whether it's Janu or Delaney or Campanero or Nick Williams or Burnett or Jennings or Matthews or Davis or whatever, the offense is designed next man up, next man up, next man up. So we can't minimize the loss of Delaney Walker. Mm-hmm. Again, he may not be a loss. He may be out there tomorrow night. We don't know because Mike Vrabel didn't tell us anything, and who knows how serious the injury is. So we could be making a mountain out of a molehill, or this could be something that he's out for a month, and we just don't know. If he misses actual game time, he hurts the team in a big way. You got to have your best pass catcher out on the field and a leader of the team. But in the preseason, in the meantime, it does allow for Marcus to get more reps with guys that he needs to build rapport with. So Jonnu Smith is very talented. He's very athletic. He's a freak of nature when it comes to his size and speed and mobility. And I think getting him some more reps, he's already sort of a number one anyway because they run two tights a lot. But this offense is designed to get the guy open, not Delaney Walker open, right? Like, it's designed to get the position in the formation open. And that's sort of where I'm with D-Mace. Like, I'm optimistic about how it's progressed. It took a while. It took a couple of weeks. They're starting to get a little bit more of a rhythm. We'll find out in game two and really in game three how much. And that's really when you want Delaney. Like, if you want reps with Marcus and Delaney, you want them out there in game three. Tomorrow's not nearly as big a deal for Delaney.
All right, we've got to give a little love to Nashville's own and Vanderbilt's own Brant Snedeker yesterday. Sneds goes out and fires a 59 at the Wyndham Championship. It is the event coming off of the PGA Championship last week, the final event before the playoffs begin. And the thing that is unbelievable, there's only been, prior to yesterday, only 9 times, I believe, somebody has shot a 59. Sneds becomes number 10 to do so, and he started his round with a bogey. So I don't think you're ever thinking 59 when you start with a bogey, but shout out to Brant Snedeker.
Yeah, way to go, Sneds. What I would kind of ask you is just where does this – like how big of a deal is this? And would you say 8 times this has ever happened?
He's the ninth.
This was number –
No, he is the ninth.
Okay, in the history of the game?
In the history of golf. Wow.
At any course, in any tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's pretty big time stuff. So yep. 59, just it, like to those of us who hack it up around 92, 93, 94.
Man.
Like, can you imagine? Like, what would a 59 feel like when you make that last putt and you go, man, almost had a 58?
Well, I actually shot like, 59 once.
I've shot a 59 on one
on video game?
On a back nine.
Yeah.
Like, I've shot a 59 in one half of a round. No question. Especially the back nine after a few beers. Yeah.
I couldn't shoot 59 in a video game, much less in reality. That is just... And I'm not going to over...
59 is insane.
I don't know if it's the toughest thing to do in sports, but it is one of the most rare feats. I mean, think about how many times in baseball we've seen no-hitters in perfect games. I mean, this is kind of the equivalent, except it happens far less.
Isn't the four-home run game more rare than the no-hitter?
Yeah.
Or like there are certain things, like the cycle is obviously happens a bunch.
Mm-hmm.
But there are there's a lot of things in baseball that like are super, super rare. Like
the triple play.
Do what?
The triple play. That's rare.
The unassisted triple play?
Yeah. I actually...
In general doesn't happen a lot. One happened last night, but it doesn't happen a lot.
Bad timing on your part.
I don't care.
This will go to show you I have no ego. I hit into a triple play in slow pitch softball once.
Oh, wow.
I don't think that indicates that you don't have an ego.
I am willing to. I mean, my buddies razzed me about that for years.
How can you... Oh, no, whoa. How can you?
You want to know how it happened?
You probably hit a rope.
Slow pitch.
You hit a rope.
I hit an absolute missile at third base.
See, he
runners at first and second.
He humble bragged a little bit there.
A little bit. I mean, got to take some pride in it. And the guy quickly tagged third.
Yeah, throws
he
a second.
Zips it to second, yeah. And I was dogging it. And then I realized, oh my god, I might hit into a triple play. I tried to bust it the last 5 yards, and I was out by a half step.
Oh, so it wasn't he didn't catch it on the fly at third base.
No, it was like a one hop.
See, that's what.
Okay. Oh, that's
if
bad.
He didn't catch it.
So you didn't leg it out.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm being lazy. I don't like many things out.
No. You were being lazy.
I gotta leg it out.
Oh, my goodness.
That's what I get. See, this is
you
why you always hustle.
Did y'all win that
game?
We got beat by like 12.
You cost
them
the game.
Here's the deal. The triple play that is all force outs, that's difficult.
Yeah.
Am I getting the wrong word here? Tag on the base.
When you're four, catch it. And the guy that's running towards you, he's out automatically.
Right. It's the force out, right?
Yeah. Like,
is it early in the morning or what's going on here?
Don't worry, the breakfast is coming.
I need some stinking omelets here. Give me an omelet.
All right, you know what we need? We need some volunteers.
Love the omelets at Kitchen Nuts, by the way.
They're phenomenal. I'm getting whatever you get. Josh Ward, WNML in Knoxville, will stop by. We'll talk Vols with him. And a former Vol was shining bright on national TV last night. We'll touch on that as well. It's Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game, and streaming on the Game Nashville app. Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Cale, Braden Gall, Derek Mason, and Chase McCabe with you on this Friday as we broadcast live from Kitchen Notes inside of the Omni Nashville Hotel. Every Friday at 6:30, you know the deal. We head to Knoxville as we welcome in Josh Ward from WNML. Josh, good morning. How are you?
Hey, doing well. Great to be on with you guys.
We'll get to a lot of football in a moment, but one thing I wanted to bring to your attention and figure out your thoughts on this. I don't even know if you watched, but last night the Jets-Redskins game, the ESPN Monday Night Broadcast team, former Vol Jason Witten in the booth. I thought he came off really well. Not sure if you watched it or not, but I got the feeling that the former Vol might just be a star in the broadcasting industry.
Yeah, I think Jason Witten has a chance to be really good on the media side and broadcasting. And when I say the media, we're talking about broadcasting. He'll be doing hits on ESPN. You'll see him on SportsCenter and different shows. And I didn't think that Jason was thought of as this big media personality that you'd want to go talk to an interview while he was playing with the Dallas Cowboys. But I think that's part of what allowed Jason to go about and do his business the way he did for a decade and a half in the NFL. But I think he'll be really good. I think he'll be insightful and now have a chance to maybe show even more personality. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he does, and I think it was a good opportunity for him. He could have kept playing another year or two probably if he wanted to, but similar to his former teammate, Tony Romo, there was a really good opportunity in a booth, and for Jason Witten with broadcasting and media opportunities in the future, I'd say that we're going to see and hear from Jason for a long time if that's what he wants to do for a long time.
And I think Booger McFarland being a really good analyst along with him, I think helps ease him into that situation. I thought the three of them were really good last night. Josh, if anything at all, what have you learned about Tennessee Volunteers camp and practice in 2018? Have you learned anything new about this team so far?
Well, I guess I'm kind of giving an assumption because we don't see all of what they do in practice. We don't see a lot of it, actually. But I think we've learned that Tennessee players have bought in and that they are doing what is asked of them on the practice field by the coaches. In the spring, there were several times, most notably after the spring game, when Jeremy Pruitt was not happy with the effort. And after the spring game, he said that some players quit. And we have not heard anything like that from Jeremy Pruitt this fall. It's not that he's been totally okay with everything that they've done. He hasn't come into press conferences gushing about his team, but he has been more complimentary and seems to like the competition level. And that tells me that players have bought in. Now, does that mean Tennessee's going to go beat West Virginia? Not at all. Doesn't mean Tennessee's going to go win three or four SEC games this year. But I think that we've learned that players, especially with the lack of attrition, not a lot of guys left during the offseason or the summer months. That's probably a good sign on players buying in as well. Now it's a matter of how much can they pick up, how much can they do from what these coaches are going to demand of them on the field. You know, like Jonathan Kongbo, we heard from him on Thursday. He's made that move to outside linebacker and said all the right things and seemed genuinely excited about playing for Jeremy Pruitt. In 2 weeks, we'll find out if he's made a big leap as a player on the field.
Now, I think one of the biggest questions is Trey Smith. How long will it take him to get back into form? But would you agree that him not being on the playing field has worked out sort of good for the other offensive linemen because it gives them an opportunity to kind of plug and play, see where guys fit, get an opportunity for guys to play at different positions until Trey comes back? Because we know once he's back fully, then the offensive line, as far as where guys will be placed, will be solidified.
That should be a benefit for several of those players because Trey is the only guy on the offensive line who is proven, who whether he's playing left tackle, left guard, on the right side, where you say he's going to play really well, and you know that that's the case. And an example of moving guys around, we have seen here in the last few days, Drew Richmond playing on the right side, playing at right tackle. Guys have moved around to different guard positions. And at the beginning of fall camp, when we talked to offensive coordinator Tyson Helton, he said that where Trey plays would be based on need. So the next 2 weeks, that was an opportunity to look at all of those different players. Some guys have been in and out, but they've had a chance to move Ryan Johnson around. Brandon Kennedy is solidified as the starting center, I believe. So you're looking at the two guard spots and then what they have at the tackle positions. And I think right now there's a good chance that Trey Smith is Tennessee's starting left tackle. He's been able to do some light contact work. He's expected to be fully cleared for contact in the next few days. So Sunday or Monday was the date given out by Jeremy Pruitt at the start of camp. So we'll be paying attention here in the next few days. But Drew Richmond over the last few days, that would be an example of moving over to the right side where he played in high school and see if that's the best spot for him. And if it is, I think that would probably open up the move to left tackle for Trey Smith.
Talking to Josh Ward, WNML in Knoxville. 2 weeks from tomorrow, Josh, it will be game one of the regular season, the Vols in West Virginia. How much of the game installation is already in place for West Virginia, and how much do you think is still left to be installed over these next 13 days?
Well, I think they'll probably start to transition more to that in the next week. Tennessee has a big scrimmage on Saturday, and from there I think you'll start to see the transition from fall camp into game week because 2 weeks it's almost like next week is an off week, a bye week, and then you have the game week. So you have 2 weeks to get ready for a big time opponent. And when we heard from Jeremy Pruitt on Wednesday after practice, that's the last time he spoke to the media, he did say that after about practice six in fall camp, so sometime last week, they started to take some big picture looks, some concept looks at what a number of opponents will do. So not just West Virginia, but there was a little bit of that sprinkled in, but other SEC teams that they'll go up against as well. So they've used some practice time already to allow the players to get an idea of what they're going to be going up against. But I think after this weekend, after the second big scrimmage of fall camp, Tennessee's going to start to transition into game week preparation for West Virginia.
Josh Ward joining us here, WNML in Knoxville. Obviously, the defensive line, not a lot of depth and not a lot of proven commodities in the secondary at cornerback. Those seem to be the two biggest areas of concern for Jeremy Pruitt, who is of course, a defensive guy. Who are there some young guys that you feel are stepping into bigger roles now that we've seen a couple of weeks of camp that maybe fans haven't heard about yet as far as contributors on at those two positions?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that's going to continue to be the case as this season goes along. So in the secondary, there's a good chance that Alante Taylor starts at cornerback as a true freshman. And think about his progression. He spent the first half of spring practice. He did enroll early as a wide receiver and then moved over to defensive back to get a look there. He looked good. Some of his teammates in the defensive backfield were still struggling a little bit. And I think Alante, he's absolutely going to play right away, but I think has a good chance to start immediately in the secondary. Bryce Thompson is another true freshman that will have a chance to play right away. He's a corner that's really athletic, former South Carolina commit, former Virginia Tech commit as well. And then Trevon Flowers is another freshman defensive back that will probably factor in pretty early. So there are three newcomers that will have a chance, and two of those guys weren't here in the spring. That's another example of, I think, Jeremy Pruitt feeling better long-term. On the defensive line, I think one guy, he's a second-year player, Matthew Butler, will absolutely factor in. Depth is just, it's a big question mark to me on the defensive line. Emmett Gooden's a JUCO player who's come in, so he's not necessarily younger, but he is new to the defensive line, and he has to help. And then at some point, Tennessee will probably need a freshman defensive lineman to help right away as well, which can be scary in the SEC. They had a really good one a few years ago in Derek Barnett, but it's tough to find Derek Barnett. So I don't think anybody has that kind of expectation. But somebody like Kingston Harris, he's a freshman from down in Florida. He could be counted on pretty quickly because they just don't have that many bodies behind Shai Tuttle, Kyle Phillips, and Emmett Gooden, Alexis Johnson. After that, they're going to give some guys some opportunities. Paul Bain, he'll play as well. So there's some names to mention, but a lot of those guys still unproven at this point.
Josh, final one for me. We got about 60 seconds left. Your best gut feeling as to how this is going to play out as far as attendance in a neutral site in Charlotte. Are we going to see a sea of orange 13 days from now, or do you expect this to be closer to 50-50 with West Virginia and Tennessee fans?
Yeah, there's going to be a good amount of Tennessee fans that are going to be there because they sold out their allotment and asked for more tickets and sold those as well. And Charlotte's an easy drive for Knoxville. I've said over and over again, I really wish this were a home and home. I wish you'd get Knoxville and Morgantown both represented. But
that'd
I think
be so
be a
awesome.
Fun one for yeah, I think it would. I think it's going to be fun for Tennessee fans going over to Charlotte. Charlotte's a cool city as well. So they'll fill up those seats, and those who didn't buy tickets will be going over there to get even more. But I could soapbox the rest of your show if you wanted me to on the home and home. I know we're starting to see more signed up, but Knoxville, Morgantown, how cool would that be if they were doing it? Charlotte's a nice backup, though.
Well, CJP wants to recruit in those neutral site territories, so he's not going to probably change. You're not going to get your wish, Ward. He's probably going to keep doing this stuff because that's the way we're going in college football.
Well, you need to win some of these neutral site games, too, if you're going to recruit effectively down the line. But baby steps, I'd say, to start off.
Yep.
Josh, good stuff, man. We appreciate the time. As always, have a good weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Josh.
Josh Ward, WNML in Knoxville. When we come back, should the Vols be zeroing in on Jalen Hurts? Stay there. It's Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are live inside of Kitchen Notes, Omni Nashville Hotel, Nick Braden, D-Mace, and Chase. All right, so let's a couple of reactions off of what Josh Ward had to say with, you know, things that you've learned so far in camp. And then also, should the Volunteers go after Jalen Hurts? Let's start with the camp thing.
Well, I was going to say, let's hold off on camp because I need you to, okay. I want you to sell me on why Jalen Hurts should go to Tennessee.
You know, I put some thought into this last night, and I do not as great as it sounds on the whole, I don't think it would be a good decision for Tennessee.
Interesting.
First of all, how many years of eligibility would he have left?
So so here's the deal, and we've talked about this. Jalen Hurts should stay at Alabama this year.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
He's set to graduate at the end of this semester.
Yep.
And then when he transfers, if he only plays four games this year, he can play two more years somewhere else because he can redshirt this year in theory. So he could have up to two more years somewhere else starting, or one or guaranteed one more year. Mm-hmm. So if he stays at Alabama and graduates at the end of the spring, and Nick Saban only plays him in four games,
that's if Nick is being nice.
And unless they need him, I mean, if they need him, then I think Nick needs to handle it like just forget about everything and just say what's the best thing for
for Jalen Hurts.
For the football team, and then consider Jalen Hurts' feeling as well. And if he needs him to play, like if Tua Tagovailoa gets hurt, you're going to have to play Jalen Hurts. Yeah. But there, he doesn't fit in the system.
Well, that's all I was going to say.
With Tyson Helton necessarily. But he is so far and away better than anything that they currently have, at least that we think, at Tennessee. But here's the other thing is Nick Saban, does he let him go? If he graduates, I don't think he has a choice of holding him back. And they've already taken an Alabama transfer already. The offensive lineman has already transferred up to Tennessee. So Pruitt has a tie, obviously, to Alabama. We all know about all the ties to Alabama. I don't know if he fits in the system. But what you want is Garantano to win the job and to grow up and develop and be the guy, because then you get potentially two more years with him. You could have 3 years of Jarrett Garantano if he develops into the starting quarterback, and Jalen Hurts could throw a giant wrench into that at the end of the season.
Well, I think for a younger player, if you get word of Jalen Hurts potentially coming to your university, you know he's coming for one reason, and it's to be the starting quarterback. So I'm with you, Braden. You don't bring him in unless you just realize Garantano's not the guy.
Exactly.
You know, we've played him. You know, we've went through the season. He's just not the guy. We haven't seen the development that we wanted to see. So now we go out and we may be looking to getting Jalen Hurts and bringing him here. All the while getting a freshman to come in here, you know, to potentially, you know, start after Jalen Hurts if you do indeed get him. But I don't think you can bring him in.
If you get him for 2 years, I think it's a no-brainer.
But if you feel, if you get him for one,
by the time he figures out the offense, he's going to be gone.
I'm not worried about the 1 year.
It's what DMA says, though. It's about Garantano.
If you feel he's the guy and he's shown progress, you don't get him. But if he hasn't, whether it's 1 year or 2 years.
Yeah, then you take him.
You take him.
Yeah.
I just don't think – I mean
– here's how Pruitt wants to win games. Power football, right?
Yeah.
But if let's just say Garantano is, he's just, you know, he's not, he doesn't blossom into something great. He's not an abject disaster. He's just like a game manager. He's an okay quarterback.
Are you winning games?
Well, let's say you're winning six, seven games.
Well, if you win seven games, then Garantano's the guy.
Yeah, he is.
If you win seven games this year with this team against that schedule, Garantano's proven then.
But
if they go 5-7.
If Hurts ends up playing more than four games and only has 1 year of eligibility, and we all know he's not a pro-style quarterback, is it even a fit?
Like, I mean, I think Jalen Hurts is too good of a player and
like
too
I'm
good
so
of a teammate.
I'm so with you on the whole Nebraska thing. Like, he would be so much
would love
fun
it.
To watch with Scott
I
Frost.
I would love to see him with Scott Frost. It would remind me of 1997, Al Bundy's glory days. No, but I just think he's – like, he doesn't fit the pro-style scheme that Tyson Helton wants to run. But if you want to go downhill power football, Jalen Hurts can do that. And so if all you're asking him to do is throw 17, 18, 19 passes a game and you're going to win with defense and power football, Jalen Hurts, he's built like a running back. He can run the power game. Is he going to make you the big plays down the field? Probably not. This team's going to have to win with defense in those swing games. They're not going to beat Alabama, Georgia, or, you know, these teams anytime soon, but can they start beating Missouris and South Carolinas and Vanderbilts and Kentuckys with this style of game? Absolutely. I think Hurts is too good of a player. Too proven of a commodity, a great leader, a good kid in the community. Like, all these things are so positive about him that I think he would be an upgrade. But he has to be clearly an upgrade. That's the thing. Like, if Garantano develops and takes just a small step and they go 6-6 or 7-5, I don't think you want to derail the progress. Mm-hmm. I think you want to keep him going. But all of it depends on how he looks and what he is. And the best evaluation of that is going to be Pruitt and Tyson Helton in a room together watching film, just a couple of guys in there deciding. So
yeah, and I think Jalen Hurts is a really good player, but clearly Tua I think is going to be the guy and is a better quarterback.
But let's
take the Jalen Hurts. Oh, he's 26-2. He's this, that, and the other thing. Flip him to Knoxville. I mean, he's not going to be surrounded by all the 5-star and 4-star elite talents that are in Tuscaloosa. So you might have expectations for Jalen Hurts if he went to Tennessee. And then he's asked to do so much and try to overcompensate, and he could fall on his face.
Is he better than what you have? That's it, right?
At this very moment, you have to say yes, right?
100% yes today.
I can see this working out and playing out sort of the same way it did for Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson leaves North Carolina State, goes to Wisconsin, smart enough kid, learns the offense very quickly, and all of a sudden he finds himself – in the Big Ten championship. Not to say that Jalen Hurts, not to say a
little different arm talent on Russell Wilson.
Not to say that Jalen Hurts will take UT.
He only played 1 year though at Wisconsin, right?
Yeah, he played 1 year.
They lost two Hail Marys. Otherwise, they would have been undefeated that year, maybe playing for a national championship.
So, because that Wisconsin offense is sort of built the way I think it's built, the way
similar,
Pruitt wants to run an offense, you know, run downhill, run base. I think he could come in, and because they're not asking him to do all of these exotic things within this offense.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, they would ask him to, you know, we assume we're going to have a really good offensive line once Trey gets back. We got running backs. Let's play power football and win that way. Play really good defense. I think that's the only way Tennessee, at least at the beginning, they're going to win football games, is if they play that old school Alabama type of football.
Grind
power
it
football
out.
And play really good defense.
Yeah. No, I agree. Listen, the equation for me is not today. We know Jalen Hurts is better than what Tennessee has at quarterback today. The question is Jalen Hurts better than what they have at quarterback at the end of the year? Mm-hmm. And the only people that will know that are the coaching staff. And if they – and that obviously they should be doing their due diligence. I'm assuming there's back-channeling illegal conversations happening with every team in America going, hey, hey, Jalen's mom.
we may have an
opening at quarterback next year. I got a scholarship for you in January if you'd like to come enroll in classes and start a quarterback next year. But I assume that's everybody's doing that. I mean, Jalen can reach out and talk to whoever he wants to, as long as Alabama's told him that he can. So it'll be interesting to see. I think Garantano is one of the more important players in the SEC this year. If he doesn't win the job and isn't good enough to beat out Keller Christ, Then you have another quarterback issue next year probably, and that's the problem. Is this? They're kicking the can down the road on this. Like they, you know, Josh Dobbs, they found him, they established him, and he was great for a period of time. Covered up a lot of problems. He and Derek Barnett covered up, you know, he was the Tim Tebow of Florida, where Tim Tebow covered up all the cultural issues at Florida by being one person. Josh Dobbs and Derek Barnett covered up all of the backstory cultural issues under Butch Jones. They've just been kicking the can. Like, Quentin Dormady's not the answer. You know, Will McBride's not the answer. If Garantano's not the answer, then they're just – and then that means Christ is a mediocre starter this year, and then they're right back in the situation again next year. So I think Hurts is a viable option if it's Keller Christ. Mm-hmm. If it's Garantano this year and they go to a bowl game, I think you ride with Garantano the rest of his career.
Coming up next, Ryan Ellis, the ultimate team player. But what does it mean for the rest of the Preds? It's Morning Drive. Nick Braden, D. Mason Chase live from Kitchen Notes on ESPN 102.5 The Game and streaming on the Game Nashville app.